People are actually losing their homes and asking to rent in our apartments.
The biggest obstacle is, of course, lack of funds.
We think we've helped 58,000 people.
We're constantly having a greater demand for affordable housing.
Welcome to the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing.
It's likely that if you're listening to this podcast, you understand the dire need for affordable housing. But many people are challenged to understand the issues at play and don't prioritize paving the way for new affordable housing in their neighborhoods. Hi, I'm Joanne Green, and on this episode of the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing, we'll hear from Tiffany Manuel of Enterprise Community Partners. She and Nat Kendall Taylor of the Frameworks Institute recently published a paper around affordable housing messaging entitled, You Don't Have to Live Here, Why Housing Messages Are Backfiring and 10 Things We Can Do About It. Tiffany Manuel is Vice President of Knowledge, Impact, and Strategy at Enterprise Community Partners, whose mission is to create opportunity for low and moderate income people through affordable housing in diverse, thriving communities. They work with partners nationwide to build opportunity, lend funds, finance development, and manage and build affordable housing while shaping new strategies, solutions, and policy. Welcome to the podcast, Tiffany.
Thank you so much, Joanne.
Your work at the Frameworks Institute was in strategic communication. Can you tell us what that actually means, what strategic communication is, and why it's important for affordable housing messaging?
So first of all, let me just step back and just say thank you so much for the invitation.
So I would say that, like any kind of communications, it's about how do you disseminate a set of messages that you think will engage folks, right, to act in particular ways. In this case, we really want to engage folks to think more specifically about how they can partner or how they can be thoughtful about changing the dynamics on the ground with respect to housing insecurity or material hardship. So the communication part, I think, is pretty standard. I think what's different about the sort of strategic communications piece is really around the evidence base. So how do we know that the messages and the framing of these issues are really having their intended effect? And so I think there, for the last about 10 to 15 years, Frameworks, as well as some other folks in the social sciences, have really been stepping back and saying, wait a minute, let's test this out. When you actually go out and you say things like, people are struggling to make ends meet, they're making significant trade-offs when their rent is too high, and those trade-offs occur in terms of their inability to pay for medical, or their inability to pay for medical costs, or their inability to buy groceries, or other kinds of things. How does that then kind of shape the extent to which folks who are hearing that get a sense that they should be involved, that they have a stake in the success of those folks? How does that actually work? And I think the reason why this is so important, the work that we're doing with Frameworks is so incredibly important, is that when we went out to test some of these kind of go-to messages for the field, what we have found, the same way we found in many other fields like this, is that those messages are having all kinds of unintended consequences. And we're getting what we would consider to be kind of a backfire effect, where you think you are kind of raising the consciousness of folks around these issues. You think you are raising the sort of political salience of these issues, that you are raising public support. You're building the will of folks to really address these issues. And in fact, some of our early research suggests that those messages are actually having the opposite effect. They are diminishing support for the things that we think are important. And so strategic communication sort of steps back to say, if these messages are not having their intended effect, then how can we be more thoughtful and intentional about what we're saying, how we're saying it, and how can we erode the field and thinking more strategically about that?
You really can't separate all these different issues, right? Transportation, food insecurity, housing insecurity, they're so interconnected.
Absolutely.
What would you say are some of the challenges and opportunities for affordable housing messaging?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I would say some of the challenges, as I was saying, are just that our go-to messages are challenged. We're playing right into kind of some very predictable, common, some predictable and pretty common kind of areas of what we would consider to be backfire. So when you raise up kind of really anecdotal stories about individual families, which we have come to believe is really important that people get a sense of the folks who are struggling hard, When you do that without providing some context about the systems right underneath those families, the systems that should be helping those families, or the kind of systems change dynamic are parts of that, then what it does is force folks to really focus on what's wrong with those people. And so it has the effect of othering. And so I think, you know, there are lots of kind of the opportunity is that there are lots of ways just in sort of strategic communications that we already know that are problematic as kind of general frames. And so I think, you know, we already have a good sense of applying that general framework or those general frames or challenges of those frames to this issue. And I think those are some real opportunities for us to step back and look at our messaging and be thoughtful, even before kind of the final research kind of results are done, to kind of rethink our messaging. Some of the other opportunities, I think, is that right now we're just in a really catalytic moment. I think there's just so much happening within housing. I think because the housing challenges have become so acute in so many different cities, there really is a kind of a different kind of awareness and willingness for at least some local stakeholders to engage with us. I think there's a lot of new research that's recently come out that really bolsters the case for why housing is part of any kind of opportunity solution. There's all kinds of stuff happening kind of in at legislative levels and also in terms of the Supreme Court kind of decisions that came out last year. So all that to say, we've got a lot going on there. We've got some real opportunities to reexamine our messaging using some of the best and brightest kind of evidence around the sort of communications work. And we've also got some real opportunities to kind of really to pilot that, to see whether or not we can really raise and build public support, kind of given the salience of the issue in the public at the moment.
Tiffany, you've talked about the backfire effect when it comes to communicating. Could you describe what that is and why it happens to the best of us? We say ABC, for instance, and people hear 1, 2, 3, right? Something happens between you say and they think.
So we've spent quite a lot of time, the Frameworks Institute and Enterprise, sort of thinking about and also studying kind of what is exactly the backfire in terms of our messaging on housing. When I say backfire, there is what social scientists call a backfire effect. And that is when people have, they come to an issue with information that is, that's wrong, that is not kind of consistent with the data and evidence. And then we try and correct that information using the best kind of data and evidence that we have. And we throw as much of it out there as we can. And what we find is a backfire, that kind of inclination to try and use the, you know, raw facts and data to try and reshape the conversation actually backfires. And what happens is that people hunker down, I would say, in their original predispositions. And so even if they understand, but or even if the data suggests that those predispositions are not in fact true. And so we have found in a variety of different areas that kind of backfire, where you try to argue folks out of a position given the logic of data and facts. And what you find at the end of that conversation is that you've done more to push people back into those predispositions than others. And I think there are lots of ways in which that that takes place. For us, you know, thinking about kind of mobility is a huge area of backfire when you say that affordable housing is a challenge and that people don't have access to in different cities. They say, well, then why can't they move? Then why can't they get a U-Haul and why can't they move? And so, you know, data and facts are never going to get people up and over that kind of backfire, because mobility is an issue, right? It's certainly an option. People can certainly get in and get the U-Haul and put their stuff in and move. You know, the issue for us is that we're trying to build, you know, inclusive communities, inclusive of a large number of folks who may have different kinds of incomes, may be racially and ethnically different. And so we have a vision that's different. And so for us, you know, the backfire effect is important. And the challenge for us is that we have tried to use the traditional methods of data and facts to get up and over that. And I don't at all want to say that data and facts are unimportant. They are extremely important, but not for the things that we're talking about, getting people who are predisposed to ideas that are contrary to ours to get them over that.
Got it.
For getting out of the backfire, you need a very different kind of approach. And that's where the strategic communications and reframing comes in.
Makes total sense. Often housing advocates rely on data to explain housing markets and public policy. We talk about gentrification, concentrations of poverty, housing choices. And this leads to what you and others have called separate fates or interests and othering. What is that, and how is the way we approach this counterproductive when it comes to trying to influence and change public understanding?
Yeah, I think separate faith is a huge issue. It's an issue that occurs when we try and present the best case, right, that we can for the families that are struggling. And we do a lot of that kind of anecdotal storytelling about particular families that we know are struggling because we think that it will land on a empathetic or sympathetic ear. And often it does not, for all kinds of reasons, one of which is because people often think about these issues as their fates or their interests is very separate. So their fates are separate in the sense that they think, I'm really sorry that that happened to you, and I can certainly be empathetic, but that has nothing to do with me. And that's an indication that they don't see their stake, right, in this other person's success. They're certainly, you know, sad to hear the story. But they don't see that their own lives are implicated in any way in that other person's trajectory. And the other part of that is the interest. I think, you know, a lot of these kind of public policy issues, whether it's the ballot initiative in San Francisco and other places, where people think of it as a zero sum game. So if there's resources that go to those families, right, and othering, then what are the resources that then come back to me and my family? And so when they reason from this position of zero sum, right, if anything that goes for somebody else is $1 for somebody else is $1 away from the things that affect me directly, then it becomes really counterproductive and really a challenge for housing advocates who want to share why the work that we do on behalf of the families that we serve is really really benefits everybody.
Most people avoid the unpleasantness of the comment section of online articles about affordable housing. We see comments like, if you can't afford to live here, move to where you can, or they made poor life choices. Why should the government bail out poor people? I understand that you've looked into the roots of these comments. Why is that, and what did you find, Tiffany?
So it's interesting. You know, we live in a very interesting culture where you don't always get to hear the backfire in everyday conversation. We have these conversations that are largely polite at in the middle of the soccer field.
Right, and we surround ourselves with people who see the world as we do.
That's exactly right. And so it's really hard if you really want to get kind of unfiltered the best and the worst of how people really feel about issues. And so it turns out that one of the places where you can still get a lot of unfiltered commentary on both sides of the field is in the comment section of news articles. You have a news article that says, you know, rents in Chicago are going up, and that has a pretty objective kind of middle of the road approach. And then what you see is all the fallout that happens in those comment sections, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, literally, of comments about what's happening there. Now, the challenge, of course, of those comment sections are real, right? Some of the kind of harshest things that the folks who want to remain anonymous and say some really harsh things certainly come to the fore. But the benefit of us looking at that is that's how we find out kind of what's in the soup, really, at the deepest levels of how people understand and think about our issues.
Interesting. As we hit the streets and have conversations about affordable housing, what are some of the cultural narratives, as you term it, that we may come across in communicating with the public? How can we move the conversation forward? Like, what cultural narratives can we activate and engage, and which ones should we avoid?
Yeah, that's really important, because I want to make sure that, you know, we're clear that kind of just reading the comment section is not the only place that you get some of that really thoughtful way of understanding what's there. We also do kind of in-depth with the Frameworks Institute, some really in-depth, thoughtful interviewing that gets at the kind of root of some of this. So, you know, some of the large cultural narratives that show up consistently, not just in housing, but across a whole range of social issues, are things like, personal responsibility and individualism, this notion of rugged individualism, that people are responsible for their own circumstances, that people should be self-made. And so, you know, when you're trying to talk about affordable housing and you keep running up against that, you know, some point, you got to figure out a way up and over that, or it continues to stymie your efforts to build public support because it is such a dominant narrative. These notions about separate fates is another one that we talked about on the call already, is a huge one. The inability to sort of think beyond kind of the sort of common way in which we all are facing some of these kinds of issues is a real challenge. And how we message actually activates, right, those kinds of cultural narratives, or they can deactivate them, which is really, I think that's really the hopeful story here, right? If it was just a story that people kind of have these predispositions, they go down that road and that's the end, it would be a problem. But what we know from a lot of social science research is that the way that we frame issues actually activates or deactivates some of that. And so there are a lot of what we would call recessive cultural narratives that are much more productive. For example, we found that the public thinks a lot about this narrative about where you live shapes you. So when we talk about when you live in neighborhoods where people are more active, where there are parks, it raises the likelihood that you are, in fact, like more active. And when you live in a community in which people are friendly, when you live in a community where you have access to, you know, all kinds of resources, people tend to avail themselves of those kinds of things, or at least have the opportunity to do so. And so it turns out that when you start to talk in those ways, and you can certainly weave housing into that, you actually get a much more productive result because you're framing it in a slightly different way and activating those narratives that are much more productive, much more positive, and I think lead to a much more productive kind of public support for housing and a whole range of kind of issues in the built environment.
Tiffany, what are some of the early results of your research that others can begin using as a tool?
Yeah. So I would say, you know, we've done a lot of research in this space, some of which we're just now beginning to share. But, you know, some of the most important pieces, I would say, are really understanding at the level of across the housing field, you know, kind of a checkup. How are we doing? Are we doing a good job of explaining the issue of housing insecurity and the relationship of housing to opportunity? Are we lifting up values that would help people see the collective benefits? Are we broadening the understanding of the broader impacts of our work? Are we doing a really good job of promoting solutions? And so I would say, you know, those kinds of things are coming out of the research and, you know, taking each one of them separately. We're doing a great job of promoting solutions. If you look across the field, we did a survey nationally across the field at some of the most prolific communicators in the field, some of the broader kind of the brightest organizations in the field, and found that solutions are ripe. And also what's interesting about that is the media is picking that up, which is great. But on the other side of it, we are not very good at the values-based messaging of really talking about why it's important, about why others have a stake in our success. And I would say that that kind of messaging, those kind of results, and that kind of push in that direction would help us tremendously, especially with some of the things like the San Francisco Ballot Initiative.
Gotcha. Final question for you today, Tiffany. Enterprise is moving forward the Make Room campaign. Can you share what that is, what the goal of the campaign is, and how strategic communication and framing are being utilized?
Absolutely. So hopefully many of your listeners have already become acquainted with the Make Room campaign. The Make Room campaign is really raising awareness about the rental housing crisis across the country. The challenges that so many families face in both finding affordable housing, but also being able to rent across the country is just astounding. And so the Make Room campaign is really trying to build awareness of that. There's a campaign right now to have 1 million messages kind of sent to our legislators nationally. So I would encourage anybody who's listening and on the call today to go to the website makeroomusa.com and sign up, send a message to your legislator saying that you are with us, you stand with us, and you want to bring this issue to the forefront for legislators who can be thoughtful and want to be partner with us on this. And absolutely, this notion about strategic communications and framing are core to that effort. And so we are taking on all the initial kind of research and figuring out how to make our own work as effective as it can be and making sure that we are doing the best we can to lift up public support in this area too.
That's great. Tiffany, your insights have been enormously helpful today. And on behalf of everyone at Eden Housing and our listeners, I want to thank you for your time.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Sure. That's Tiffany Manuel, Vice President of Knowledge, Impact, and Strategy for Enterprise Community Partners. I'm Joanne Green. To hear prior episodes of the Affordable Housing Podcast, check on iTunes or visit us at edenhousing.org.